meets me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Gordon Goldsborough joins us now for this week's edition of Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So what are we discussing this week?
Well, for each of the last 6 years, the Manitoba Historical Society has released a list of 10 heritage structures around the province that, in our view, are at risk of loss. So today, I'm sharing with our listeners the top 10 endangered structures list for 2025.
Now, you said that you've been identifying these structures for the past 6 years. During that time, have any of them been lost in the past year?
Yeah, well, yeah. Each year, there's inevitably one or two. And in fact, within the last few months, one of the buildings from our 2024 list was lost. The Holy Ascension Greek Orthodox Church, which stands in the Point Douglas area of Winnipeg. It was a rare example of Art Deco architecture in Manitoba. It had suffered multiple break-ins and an arson fire. Well, on the 6th of January, 2025, another fire left the building a burned-out shell. The walls are still standing, but I think it's beyond repair.
So sad. Mm-hmm. So what's on the list for 2025?
I'm going to list them from oldest to newest. And so, therefore, we're going to start with the St. Peter Dynevor Anglican Rectory in the arm of St. Andrews. It was constructed in 1865, and that makes it one of the last remaining stone houses from the Red River settlement days. Initially, it was a residence for the pastor of the church, St. Peter Dynevor, which is across the river, but later, for many years, it was a hospital for Indigenous people. Still later, it was home to the St. John's Cathedral Boys' School, and finally, it was a non-profit addictions treatment center. The building, it's now vacant, very conspicuous cracks in its exterior walls, and it seems to me, at least, that it's in imminent danger of collapse. So much so, in fact, that a fence keeps visitors from getting too close.
So that's number one. What's number two?
That would be the Peck Building at the corner of Notre Dame and Princess here in Winnipeg. It's a massive six-story brick and stone clothing warehouse on the edge of the Exchange District. It dates from 1893, and it's an excellent illustration of Winnipeg's early role as the wholesale center of Western Canada and the city's once thriving garment industry. The building, well, it appears to be in good general condition structurally, yet for whatever reason, it's been vacant and therefore vulnerable for many years.
Now, I hope there's a grain elevator on this list.
Oh,
maybe
there are.
Maybe I shouldn't hope, given how much you love them.
Well, yes, inevitably, grain elevators are my passion, but also my woe, because they are, well, not as much used anymore as they once were. And so, yes, I do love grain elevators, and we actually have two on this year's list, one of which is a family elevator. In other words, not in a town somewhere, but actually on a farm. Northwest of Verdun is one of only two on-farm elevators that are made of stone that is still standing. It was built in 1893 by James Scallion. Now, that name might not resonate today, but he was one of the founders of the Progressive Political Party in Manitoba, which actually held power for many decades. It was quite an influence through the 20th century. The little grain elevator, remarkably good shape. But I suspect that the growing demand for large expanses of land, you know, if you're using big machinery to farm, you want to just be able to go great distances at a time. You don't want to have to navigate around things. Well, ultimately, I think that's going to doom this nice early example of how prairie grain was stored before it was shipped to market.
And you said there were two grain elevators on this list.
Yes. Well, the other one is a little more conventional, I suppose. It's at the railway siding of Cameron in the municipality of Two Borders in southwest Manitoba. It was owned by the former Lake of the Woods Milling Company, built in 1902. And it was used commercially until 1970, when it was sold into private hands. Now, the elevator is in good condition, like some of the other things on our list, but it's out in the middle of a farmer's field, and the railway tracks have been removed. The only way out to it, frankly, is, at least during the summertime, is to fly a drone out. And I've done that quite a few times. But I'm afraid that it is starting to deteriorate. Some of its protective metal tiles have been torn away by years of storms. And given that wooden grain elevators are an endangered species, I think all it's going to take is that the landowner will get tired of farming around it. And then what I think is Manitoba's oldest grain elevator on its original site, well, it'll be demolished.
What's next on the list?
Well, we're going to talk about another endangered species in Manitoba, and that's the country church. There are scores of them around the landscape from a variety of religious denominations, and many of them are vacant, you know, as small communities wither and die. An example is the former United Church in the wee village of Lauder in the municipality of Grassland in southwestern Manitoba. The brick building was constructed in 1904, and initially it served a Methodist congregation. It became a Union Church in 1917, and that was the precursor to today's United Church of Canada, which, by the way, is marking its 100th anniversary this year. Lauder, well, it has a population under a dozen, let's say. I'm not sure exactly if we have a true count. And a final service in the church was held actually just a few weeks ago. Now, there are several abandoned buildings in Lauder, some of them very attractive. So I really can't envision a good future for this little church.
Now, everything you've mentioned so far have been buildings, but you said that this was a list of structures.
Yes, because, of course, a structure is more general. It includes buildings, of course, but it could be other things. So, yes, our sixth item on the list is the former Canadian Northern Railway turntable at Dauphin. It dates from 1906, one of only two remaining turntables in the province, and this one is the oldest one. Its role was to position steam locomotives to be moved into an adjoining roundhouse where they'd undergo routine maintenance. The roundhouse continues to be used by the city of Dauphin for its maintenance vehicles, and in 2024, the city announced that the turntable would be removed to make it easier for vehicles to move in and out of the roundhouse. There was strong public support for retaining the turntable at its current location, but I understand now that, no, they're going through with the removal, and it'll happen sometime this summer or fall. And you know what? That's a real shame, given that it's really the only one of its kind left.
Yeah, big loss.
Mm-hmm.
There is a town hall on this list. Tell us about that.
Yep. Number seven is the Hartney Town Hall, a really fine two-story brick building that was constructed between 1905 and 1906. The main floor housed the town's firefighting equipment, and there was a large auditorium where they had all sorts of public events through the years. On the second floor, there were offices for the local fraternal organizations and the Hartney Town Band. Yes, they had a band at that time in Hartney. Use of the building, well, it ended in 2007 because the Elks, who had been showing movies on Fridays and Saturday nights, decided it was just too much money to upgrade their projectors to show digital movies. And since then, well, the pigeons have had their way with it, and they've deposited copious quantities of poop everywhere. The recent demolition of buildings along Hartney's nearby streetscape suggests to me that there may be plans to take down the town hall, too.
What's next on the list?
Number eight would be the Hales House, which stands on 10th Street in Brandon. It's an attractive two-story brick and stucco home built in 1912 for teacher Benjamin Hales and his family. Remarkably, the building has had only two families living in it since its entire existence. You know, that's pretty rare, I think, in Manitoba. Recently, however, the land surrounding the Hales House has been converted from single-family homes to multi-story apartment blocks. And I suspect that when the present owner moves out, and I'm told he's elderly, I'll not be surprised that the pressure from developers will result in the loss of this fine example of architectural heritage in Brandon.
We're getting to the end of the list. What's at number nine?
Yes, number nine is the Rover Electric Terminal, built in Winnipeg in 1912. It tells an important story in the development of Manitoba's public infrastructure. It was the terminus of a power line that ran from the Pointe-du-Bois hydroelectric generating station, and this building stepped down the voltage so that it could be used in the surrounding neighborhood of Point Douglas. But just as importantly, it transferred power to other substations around Winnipeg to service other neighborhoods. In other words, it enabled the electrification of Winnipeg, but it also supplied a transmission line all the way to Porter's La Prairie. So in other words, it was the beginning of our present-day power network for the whole province. You know, unfortunately, today the building stands vacant, and I'm told that it's repeatedly broken into. So it is not long for this world because, well, it's obsolete. It's been made redundant by improvements in technology. It's not serving any useful purpose today, and I suspect that's going to be the basis to say, tear it down.
This list is making me very sad. And we've reached the end. What's at number 10?
Our final site is one I kind of made reference to a few weeks back. It's a former bank building in Crystal City in south central Manitoba. Banks all over Manitoba are closing, including some right here in Winnipeg. This particular two-story brick building was built in 1918 as a branch of the Union Bank of Canada. When that bank merged with the Royal Bank in 1925, it continued in operation until 1975. My sources tell me that the building is surrounded by a demolition fence, and that's never a good sign. It reminds me, in fact, of the demolition we talked about here a few weeks ago of much of the commercial streetscape in nearby Pilot Mound. So a building in Crystal City, I suspect, is also not long for this world.
Where can listeners get more information on the structures that you've talked about today?
People can see the full list, along with photos and more information on each one of them, at mhs.ca/endangered. And it'll take you to the page where we list not just this year, but you can step back through each of the preceding years and see the whole sorry list of what we think are real endangered buildings.
Well, thank you for drawing attention to these buildings. What's up for next week?
I'm going to be cryptic about this one. I visited an abandoned site a month ago that is firmly cemented in my mind. And I'll share it with our listeners next week. And also next week, I actually will be reporting from the Manitoba Threshermen's Reunion in Stampede. In case anyone wants to join me at what is Canada's largest farm heritage festival, I have pairs of tickets to give away to the first two listeners who can tell us what year was the first Threshermen's Reunion. What year did it take place?
Email us right now for your chance to win. Our email address is weekend@cbc.ca. Thank you, Gordon.
You're welcome. We'll talk next week.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons ago.